It's midwinter and it's Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, I'll be speaking to Emmy the Great about the trouble with boys, Hong Kong indie, and X Factor's take on Hallelujah. And we'll have an exclusive live track from her at the end of the show too. We'll be reviewing new music from Beach House, Las Vegas, and Joss Stone. We'll be bringing your face back to your face. And the section that refuses to be named will engage with the music of Talk Talk. But first, it's legend time. Here's Robert Wyatt.
It's just a rumour that was spread around town. Somebody said that someone got filled in for saying that people get killed in the result of the shipbuilding.
That was Robert Wyatt's Shipbuilding, and listening along with me today is our own, our very own, Rosie Swash. Hello, our Rosie.
Hello, our Paul.
Hello. Now, listeners won't be able to see, but we're actually recording this pod today from inside a jacuzzi. We're celebrating. Rosie, why are we celebrating?
We're celebrating because we won Best Podcast for the second year in a row at the Record of the Day Awards last Wednesday.
That is amazing. That's a back-to-back. That's a back-to-back, as they call it in American sports. So well done us, but we only pause for self-congratulation briefly.
Yes.
Because we need to get back to the matter in hand, which is music. Mr. Wyatt, you interviewed him. You went
I
to
did.
Lincolnshire, all the way to Lincolnshire, so do. Now, he's the sort of guy you'll see on the front of Word magazine.
Yes, Robert Wyatt was the drummer with the 70s prog rock / art rock band Soft Machine, pioneers of the Canterbury art rock movement.
But of course.
Of course. But after he left the band, he had an accident when he fell out the window of a party and he broke his back, and he's been paralysed ever since. And actually, one of the things about him that always sticks out is that he covered I'm a Believer very well, and Top of the Pops wouldn't let him play, and there was a campaign because they didn't have wheelchair access.
Really?
So that's it.
He
was a fire risk. He's been very prolific since then. I think he's released 17 albums altogether. He's still regarded as the unclassified musician, genre-wise, which we talk a little bit about in the interview. But Domino Records have decided to re-release selections of his back catalogue. And so I went up to Lincolnshire to meet him and to find out why.
We were sort of rescued in the 70s, late 70s, by Jeff Travis at Rough Trade from sort of big dinosaur aloof record companies. But then we went on to on Jeff Travis's recommendation, a record company called Ryko, which got hijacked a year or two ago, which meant that our material was no longer available. I live entirely off the records, and I don't make that many, so what I make do have to be available for us to earn a living. So we were really lucky that the publisher at Ryko had already jumped ship and found himself a publisher at Domino, and he said, well, why don't you come and talk to Domino, Lawrence and that lot at Domino? So we did, and we got on well. And they said, we'll put out your next record and then we could put out your back catalogue, which is really nice for us. And we're very grateful.
But it's not all of your back catalogue, is it? It's certain selections. Did you have a choice in that?
It's most of it, really, since the stuff under my name, since the early 70s. I mean, I was a drummer for 10 years before that and in a couple of bands. But on the whole, it is my catalogue since the 70s. Yeah, it is most of it.
We're absolutely surrounded by vinyl at the moment and actual instruments. Do you ever download music, the MP3s?
I would if I could, but I don't know how to do it.
Alfie's very against it.
Well, Alfie's got a Mac. Alfie's got a Mac, and I don't know what much she does with it, but I simply don't understand all that stuff. I think we probably lost income because of people getting free downloads of stuff. And
does that anger you?
Well, Alfie once sent a message to somebody who did it and said, that's a rotten thing to do, you're depriving him of a living. And to which he put down the excellent reply, he calls himself a fucking communist, he shouldn't want the money anyway. Which I thought, yeah, well, that's a direct hit there.
Well, while we're sort of talking about Alfie and communism, because your last record did I don't know if it had so much of the political flavouring that some of your music has had, but I did read that Alfie doesn't listen to it because she finds it painful. What period of your life does it reflect?
We're talking about the last record.
Yeah.
The comic opera. Well, we've had a rough couple of years, both together, domestically, in ways that obviously I wouldn't go into in public. But, except the only thing that is obvious is the fact that I just really descended to the lower depths of alcoholism whilst writing this. I think that having hit my 60s, I started to seriously feel that that somehow, I don't know, that I was burnt out, that I was a husk of what I formerly had been, and that I needed a lot of artificial stimuli to kind of generate the kind of energy I had before. I never had any problem with ideas, but just the bothering to do stuff. And I found alcohol helped, and in the course of that, my behaviour deteriorated. Alfie felt, not exactly angry, I think, but she explained it, but sort of lonely, because one of the things she said she married us for was the company, because she's no bloody use for anything else. So if I lose that as well, if you're cross-eyed at 6 PM, then I've lost my friend, And this was, I think, why it was a painful period for her. And also she was worried that my judgment was going, that my brain was as incoherent as my speech patterns. And so she was it was a period of great anxiety for her. And when it was over, when I made the record, I did indeed have made an effort to sort of give up the worst of the habits I'd accumulated, which I'm still finding hard, actually, without vices. I'm trying to think of new vices. If you can think of any, I'll be grateful.
Do you smoking?
No, I can't smoke anymore because Alfie has a eye condition, for which smoking is very bad for it. I'm trying to think of another vice and that's left to me, that's available, and I can only think of gluttony and sloth.
I was going to say, you could gorge yourself on.
Well, I did just go out about half an hour ago instead of having a fag, and I bought a really pointless bar of cheap chocolate and sat munching it disconsolately on the pavement.
We've all done that.
Well, thanks. You look all right on it.
Was Comic Opera the most painful? When did it feel like a painful record for you to write, or is it only on retrospect that it's...
The very beginning of things, the ideas, and then the end bit when you're mixing a record is really good fun. Getting other musicians to play on them and sort of do their stuff is great. Annie Whitehead and Paul Weller, all these people, they're lovely. And I like getting people to do things they might not otherwise do, Because then you get something that I wouldn't have done and they wouldn't have done. So then you've really got justified the reason for the record.
Should I stay? Should I call it a day? There's so much to say that's unspoken.
How did you cope with that process while you were in hospital? I mean, you said you were in hospital for a year. I don't know the extent to which...
I brought me back in June. I was in the hospital for most of the rest of that year, and then not long after that, I fell out of the wheelchair, broke my legs and went back in for a few months. It didn't hurt, don't worry. Obviously, being paralysed. It's a great thing, paralysed. Once you break your legs again, you don't really give a toss. That was very good. When you're in hospital, someone else is worrying about paying the rent or even going out to buy food or make the beds. That's all done for you. So I could actually just sit there and sort of think about music for month after month.
Is that why I have to say that Rock Bottom to me does not sound like a particularly melancholy record?
No, people assume it would be, the title, I suppose, and the circumstances. I mean, it is true that people erase pain and suffering in their minds. I mean, I think back to the actual daily life when we came out of hospital. It was extremely hard. But it's just, I've abstracted it. That seems to have gone away. I'm just left with what we got out of it, which was the record and me being with Alfie, and we got married. And it was, to me, it's all a really kind of heavenly period in my life, actually, funnily enough. I know we had loads of practical problems, I mean, just money for a start, and how to live and where to live, and a couple of kind friends helped us a lot. Ronnie Scott did. A woman called Jean Shrimpton, who was a model in the 60s, and a lovely actress, Julie Christie, helped us a lot, bought us a flat, for example. Amazing thing to do.
And so we've talked a bit about all your back catalogue, but are there any plans as far as you have for any new material?
Well, I've got a tune knocking about up there that I quite like. Well, the only thing is, it was a tune I wrote for Paul. Paul Weller wrote that. I said, "Oh, right, it's a tune. I want a soul tune type thing." So I wrote what I thought was it, but in the end, he didn't use it. He said, "Well, thanks a lot, but I've got one myself." But what came out of it, I do not know. I mean, I can't say in advance. I'm so cross that I can't get drunk and smoke and be silly anymore that I might just sit here and not make records on purpose. Just to show
that'll him. Show him.
That'll show him. As if anybody gave a toss.
That's Robert Wyatt, and you can get a selection of his back catalogue on Domino Records if you go to dominorecordco.com.
How was he, Mr. Wyatt? Did you get on well?
Oh, he was lovely. What a fantastic interview.
Really?
You can hear the full interview on Music Weekly, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly.
Oh, we're going to put it up on the pop
yes.
page. Moving on, as we tend to do, it's time to introduce the man, the legend, the myth, the half-beast, Luke Bainbridge, who joins us here for this week's Singles Club. Hello, Luke, how are you?
Half-beast?
Yeah, there's still a bit of humanity in there,
I think. Right, okay.
But, you know, there's probably some kind of tiger. It's a good beast. I mean, it's not like a mole or anything like that.
All right, okay.
Big beast of the jungle. You got a new OMM coming out soon?
We've got a new OMM coming out very soon, on Sunday, in fact.
Very good, and it'll be the end of year round. We'll talk about a little bit about that in a minute, I suppose. But let's first address what we've got you here for, which is Singles Club.
Okay.
We're going to kick off this week's review with your choice of number. That's Glass Vegas and A Snowflake That Felt Like a Kiss. Now I don't feel so all alone, and I could wonder where I'm going today. For a snowflake fell, and it felt like a kiss. Now I'm right, former guests on the pod, Glass Vegas are really a lovely bunch of young men and women, which is why all the stories that surrounded the release of their debut album this year about the violence and the stabbing and the buckfast just really didn't do them justice. This might be why the band have released a special Christmas album using all their Phil Spector-ish tendencies to great effect. If you miss the violence, however, you can always pretend that this song is called A Snowflake Fell and It Felt Like a Glasgow Kiss. Luke, your choice. Tell us why.
Well, partly because they're in the issue this weekend, because we went to Transylvania with them when they were recording it, but partly because it's great. And I think if you haven't discovered this album so far this year, you should really go and get it. And I think I'm right, in fact, I know I'm right in saying that if you buy the album, if you download on iTunes, you get this Christmas EP free with it as well.
Oh, you do?
You do indeed.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I think a lot of people said, you know, about Elbow this year, that they were the people's band and the people's choice this year, I think. But I think you could also say that about Glass Vegas.
Quickly, why were they recording in Transylvania? Does it have an extra Christmassy vibe over there?
It does indeed. It's all revealed in this Sunday's
OMM. Oh, he's keeping that under wraps, isn't he? Rosie, yeah. I like this. It was touching. For me, I really, really liked the Glass Vegas album when I first heard it, listened to it a lot. And then I kind of thought, actually, it could just all be reduced to two or three numbers. It goes along the same tracks for quite a while. And I feel that maybe those things still apply with the Christmas EP.
Yes, except that they've got, you know, seasonal bells, Christmas themes, Transylvanian choir. I read that there was the part of their record deal was that when they got signed to Columbia, I believe, that they said, we want to go. I mean, I don't know if it's true, but we want to go and we want to record this Christmas EP. I mean, the thing about this song in particular is that it's very reflective and contemplative. And that's what they are like, as you know, that's what their lyrics are like as a band. And I guess that's why I agree with Luke when he says they're the people's band, is they you know, have the ability to express complex emotions in quite a simple way. And I think they still do this in the EP, and it's, of course, the same as the album, but in a good way.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm just talking, I suppose, musically, it just becomes a little bit familiar after a while.
Yeah, but it's nice that it's not all happy and festive as well, I think.
It's over, isn't it? That's a brilliant song.
Can you use that word on the podcast?
Oh, if you're quoting.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's nice to have a bit of morbid moping at Christmas as well, don't you think?
Yeah, it's so difficult to avoid. Right, that's A Snowflake Fell and It Felt Like a Kiss by Glass Vegas, and it's out to buy right now. And obviously, if you buy the album, you might get it for free. Next up, Beach House, Master of None. That was Beach House with Master of None. Beach House are a duo from Baltimore who, unusually, don't make crazy ass-shaking dance music. Instead, they make crazy head-lolling rock music. Comprised of members Victoria Legrand and Alex Scally, this track is actually from their debut album, which was released in 2006. Their follow-up, Devotion, was released this year, but we've not chosen to play any music from it. Legrand, interestingly, is the niece of French film composer Michael Legrand, the man who wrote the score to Yentl. She is not, however, related to Julien Legrand, the guy who came up with the idea of introducing choice into the NHS, fact fans. Rosie, what is your excuse for picking a song that's 2 years old?
Well, they were just playing in Europe recently, and they played London's Cargo venue last night. So that's my excuse.
That's an excuse. That doesn't really cover it, does it? But anyway, go ahead.
And it's a very good song. The Beach House were recommended to me by the very nice man who does the press for Fleet Foxes, Bella Union, which they're signed to. And we were discussing our mutual appreciation for the music scene of Baltimore, which I believe I've mentioned one or two times in this podcast. And he said, oh, if you haven't heard Beach House, you know, give them a listen. They kind of remind me of that Brooklyn act, Au Revoir Simone, which I think I've talked about before a while ago. Very, very simple music, lovely female vocals. Here you've just literally got the organ, there's barely any percussion. When on the album they do have guitar, it's just like the odd bit of bluesy slide guitar, and that's it. It's really, really slow. So it's just about that really atmospheric chamber sound that they create, and it feels quite full when actually not very much is going on. I think it's lovely. I'm very addicted to listening to it on the very cold bus journey into work of a morning.
Luke?
I really like it. I wouldn't say I was addicted to it like Rosie is, but, you know, I do.
Would you listen to it on a bus journey, though?
Possibly not on a bus journey. Possibly on a Sunday morning, flicking through the papers with a big pot of tea in front of you.
With the new OMM.
Yeah. I think it's just, as you say, Rosie, it's like really understated, and there's a lot more going on there than you actually think. So you can actually have it as background music, but if you actually properly listen to it, there's quite a lot going on there. And it's sort of, you know, it's like sort of similar to Sigur Rós or Mazzy Star or something like that.
I find it really quite beautiful and atmospheric. And I love the sound on the organ, which I've christened Angel's Tears. I'm going to copyright it and then I'm going to import it on every new keyboard. So you can just put Angel's Tears and the keyboard goes like that. But I don't think it's much of a song.
Oh, okay.
I think it's great, you know, as background, as kind of something to take you someplace. But as a song, what's it doing? Maybe more than I give it credit for, Luke, eh? Anyway, that's Beach House by Beach House. We've now brought them to your attention so you can investigate their back catalogue, and they're available on Bella Union Records. Next up on Singles Club is the Re-Op Gang featuring Joss Stone. And Celebrate. I'm surrounded by Jezebels, thousands of flock under the hood like carousel. How could I not cater my inner child? So what, I'm in denial. Boosting my morale. $1 million deal, I'm straight like I'm aroused. Any child with his own should make a mama proud. My empire built from a baking soda cloud. Music like blue magic, moved by word of mouth. That was Celebrate by the Re-Up Gang featuring Joss Stone. The Re-Op Gang is the name for a group better described as Virginia rappers Clips and their mate. Joss Stone, however, is a singer from Cornwall who is perhaps best known for her music. Sorry, that's wrong. Perhaps best known for having pink hair, no shoes, and suddenly acquiring an American accent. This is the pair's first collaboration together, and it's believed to be featuring on Clips' upcoming Rick Rubin-produced album, Till the Casket Drops. Sadly, despite the title, it's not likely to be released in time for Christmas. And now this is my choice, and I have to say, I'm going to preface this with a warning. I don't actually think it's that good a song. Well, I do.
It's a good thing you chose it.
Yeah, well, I do.
Mine might have been out for 2 years, but at least I like,
like
it.
No, I do kind of. I do like it.
I actually like mine.
Yeah, I do. I do kind of like it, you know, because I like Pusha T and Malice and the lyrics you heard there. I like it. I'm in favour of it. I'm in favour of his flow. I like the 808, but I really just did it because I just think it's perhaps one of the most unlikely R&B hip-hop crossover combinations in history.
Well, it's the first collaboration they've done together, and hopefully, I'm afraid, I think it will be the last.
They've apparently done two.
Oh, no.
So tell us why it's dismal.
I'm not feeling it at all, to be honest with you. And the Joss Stone thing is an immediate turn-off for me. I'm not a big fan of hers in general, or her music. And I just think, no, come on, please, Rosie.
Sorry.
I mean, I think there's so many other people they could have chosen to collaborate with that this is just a clash that's just not working for me at all, really.
See, I thought it was adventurous. I just thought, you go pick somebody just that far out, just kind of like totally pop and a little bit kind of no edge to her whatsoever. And an increasing reputation for diva-ishness, and stick her in the middle of a Virginia crack-based rap anthem. Clever, I thought.
I don't understand where it's come from, even if they're trying to expand, you know, into the American market, which these things always smack of. Why wouldn't they just pick someone that's actually good and credible, like Alicia Keys, who the American market... Why? I just don't... I think it's so weird. But when I was investigating it, there's all these pictures of them hanging out together at parties. So obviously they actually genuinely like each other, so maybe it's not that cynical. It's still a pile of shit.
I think that was the time when they were actually recording the music together.
The chorus sounds like an advert for Charlie Red perfume or something. She just sounds awful.
I quite liked her voice on this. It reminded me that she can actually sing.
It's good, just not in this track.
Yeah, I was expecting this kind of a tongue lashing actually, but I do think there's something in that combination and in the way it's produced, which says about American hip hop and R&B and the way they approach music, in the same way that Kanye can go and say, "I want to be the new Phil Collins." There's something in that we just don't understand. Anyway, at least I hope so. Anyway, that is Celebrate by the Re-Op Gang, a.k.a. Clips, featuring Joss Stone. And it's currently available to stream on xxl.com, and it will be on the album, which people are anticipating to drop early in the new year. So we want your reviews of this week's tracks, Glass Vegas, Beach House and the Re-Op Gang. You can post your thought on the blog at guardian.co.uk/musicblog or on Facebook, or even email us. Hey, how about that? Or music.editor@guardianunlimited.co.uk. Just don't phone Rosie's mobile. She doesn't take reviews that way. Tell us what you think of them tracks, what you heard, and these other tracks that are out to buy next week. You know that I could use somebody. Kings of Leon, Use Somebody. Someone like you. Anywhere, the presets. Spangalala, Curiosity Box. Cold War Kids, I've Seen Enough. That's your montage, and like a sudden rash proposal of marriage, it's brought an end to our time in Singles Club. Don't forget, you can get it in your actual printed words every Wednesday on guardian.co.uk/music. Luke, thank you very much for joining us today.
No problem.
What else can we look forward to in this majestic magazine of yours?
Out on Sunday, the Observe Music Monthly. And after you've quite rightly buffed and blew your own trumpet before, I think I should obviously mention
oh,
that
yeah.
Observe Music Monthly, edited by the editor of the year for the second consecutive year.
Whoop, whoop.
Casper Lennon Smith. It's our roundup of the year, so we've got our 50 best albums of the year, plus the trends of the year, gigs of the year, books, etc. of the year. On the cover, we've got Lily Allen, shot by Navdav Kander. Miranda Sawyer's at home with Lily Allen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it a pleasing domestic scene?
It is, yeah. It sounds like she's got a really lovely flat, actually. But it's also the first proper interview for Lily's comeback. What else have we got? You've got the opportunity to win the 50 greatest albums of the year. The Record Doctor is at home with Michael Parkinson, leafing through Parker's record collection.
Very good. And you can't win a holiday trip to Transylvania for Christmas, can you?
Not this week, no.
Maybe one to think about for future. But Luke, seriously, thank you so much for coming in today. Great to have you as ever. And good luck.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, why not? Okay, now Luke must go. But we can assuage our sense of loss with a clip of a song about watching an entire series of 24.
You are watching a programme for exactly an hour. All of these hours, they will add up to a day. You will sit there till they're done. Now there are 24 to play. And there are rims around your eyeballs by the 7th or the 8th.
That's Emmy the Great and 24. Her song about the whole harrowing Jack Bauer experience. Now, Emmy has been part of the London alt dot scene for a while in her own right, but she's also played in umpteen different bands too, including Lightspeed Champion, where she performed as a backing vocalist for the first half of this year. 2009, however, is looking like her time to shine, with her solo album First Love coming out next month. As befits an anti-folker, though, while Emmy might sound sweet on the outside, there's bite on the inside. So when she came into the pod this week, I asked her whether she hadn't given the idea of first love a little bit of a kicking.
Yeah, it's not very romantic. But the title is based on a book called First Love, which is not a very romantic book.
What happens in the book?
It's a Samuel Beckett book, so it's not very clear. In fact, I had to ask someone afterwards what had happened.
So basically you've taken somebody else's summary of a book and used it as the basis for your entire album.
Well, I've used it as a basis for a song. And then when we were thinking up the title, we were like, it's so clever. Well, we had to talk about Samuel Beckett.
Well, I was going to say there is a thematic consistency, I think, in your album, in that every time a young man appears in it, he's bound to be doing something idiotic.
Not idiotic. It's mean.
Mean. Well, what about when he forgets how to brake in his own car? That's idiotic.
That's not a love song. That could have been anyone. That could have been just me and a friend. But maybe someone cut the brakes.
But you say boys are being mean in this.
No, it's not. It's like a character assassination on my relationship. But
so is it one individual you have in mind here?
It's not literally him. It's just in my mind. It's this character that I've made out of one person, but we're back together now, and I happily say that I was being terrible.
Does he watch a lot of television?
No, he doesn't. That was a 24 marathon. I didn't make it through that marathon, but I participated, so. Oh,
I see.
Man on the screen, he has done more in a minute than you have achieved in your whole entire life. When you finally was the best thing you had in it. We'll be closing up your eyelids on the bed on which you died. And I'll be sorry if it happens to you. Sorry if it happens to you. Sorry if it happens to you. But they say one life is the cancer and another is the blade that makes the cut.
I was so embarrassed I didn't make it through the marathon that I went and wrote this evil song.
Oh, I see.
It's sour grapes. I have watched an entire series of 30 Rock since Saturday.
When you said that, there was just a kind of flash of fatigue passed over your face.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired.
And the album, there's three different religious anthems, the Kyrie Eleison, Hallelujah, and they all get played about and used within the songs. Did you have a religious element to your life growing up?
No, I really wished I did, though, because I grew up in Hong Kong. My dad, he thinks he's a Taoist, but he's just a very relaxed person. And my mum's got no religious inclinations except to, like, spit on the ground if someone says something bad. But like when we came to England in the summers, my granny would take me to Sunday school. And I was like, all the other kids get to go to Sunday school. I wish I could go. I'm not religious, but I probably have some issues.
Well, I wish that I never met you the day you said I have a room, I have music to play. I have a room, let me show you the way. I wish that I'd never come. But now that I have, I would do it again. And I would forget like I piss on a grave. I would forget like I piss on a grave. How the words as they came to my tongue. Hallelujah, hallelujah, and the sky was so much bluer.
But it's interesting to hear somebody of your age or a generation use these kind of religious things without them being kind of distinctly pejorative.
I think it's when you go into a church, and any church, you still feel like a sense of peace and sanctuary, but it's just really difficult to believe in all the things that it stands for, and that's quite sad.
Do you think there's an absence of a peace of an equivalent peace and sanctuary in the secular world?
The library?
The library.
But actually Kentish Town Library is not that peaceful.
Do you go back to Hong Kong much?
Not for ages, but I've heard there is now an indie scene, which is news to me.
What kind of indie?
I don't know. Someone mentioned it to me yesterday, actually, like a band called My Little Aeroplane, they said. In Beijing, they have like Sonic Youth and shoegaze kind of bands, so maybe it's like that. Not that the two are similar.
It's not kind of loads of Belle and Sebastian facers going around in lilac cardigans.
Well, Belle and Sebastian is like really dependent on lyrics, I guess. And if English isn't your first language, it might be harder. I'm not sure. Might have just really offended a lot of people from Hong Kong.
Yeah, you could just do a Chinese version. You wouldn't have to do the original Belle and Sebastian numbers.
Have you ever heard the Chinese version of Dreams by the Cranberries?
No.
It's really good.
Is it? That's really good. Well, we're going to have to try and find that.
It's
soon.
By a lady called Fei Wong.
Fantastic.
It's better than the original.
Are you as energetic in real life as you sound on record? You sound like you have a real kind of magpie's eye for umpteen different things going on at once. And also the bringing in of the of references to real life things like your discussion of is it MIA, is it Maya, and all these little things.
I have to be expressing something that I feel right now, and if I happen to be really into MIA right now, I need to tell people, and maybe she'll hear it and she will know. It's kind of the equivalent of like walking up to someone and going, oh, I really like your music. I like writing people's songs, and I like writing about myself in songs, so I guess real life will slip in.
That was Emmy the Great, and First Love will be out in January, so look out for that. Over to our friends now. We had lots of nice talk on Facebook this week after the award, didn't we?
Indeed.
Which we're very grateful for.
Indeed.
Especially the people asking, was there any actual serious competition? A question we dismiss out of hand. It was all serious.
A Kerrang.
Yeah. And on the blog this week, things were a little bit untoward, really, with most people trying to kind of get to the bottom of Michael Hand's decision to select Dinosaur Pilot as his tune of the week. Portishair, you can always rely on him.
Get up, Portishair.
He said, what a great show. The memory of Chaplin gets dimmer by the week. I presume he means Tom Chaplin of Keenan and not Charlie, the great silent comic hero.
Who will never forget.
No, exactly. He said he was off to buy Signature and UMPOC, which incidentally both happened to be recommendations by Rosie Swash. Professor Wee Too, he addressed Michael Hand directly, did he not?
That's the first I've heard of Yorkshire's burgeoning grunge scene, Mr. Han. You've certainly got your finger on the pulse of hype. Does this mean we can all start listening to Smokers Die Younger again? Wasn't once enough.
What is Smokers Die Younger? I'm not sure I've ever listened to that in the first
place.
It's
the warning that comes on the packet of cigarettes.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I always kind of obscure in my hand. Very good. OK, well, thank you very much for your feedback. I appreciate everybody who comes on our blog and posts because they're all lovely. And everybody who listens to the show for 40 minutes is special. But what I'd like to say is let's get back to the music, people. Also, on Facebook, we are teetering on the edge of 700 friends, aren't we? On the Facebook page, The Guardian Unlimited Music, it's our old name, but that was the way it was set up. If you go and search that, you'll find us teetering on the edge of 700. When we get to 700, it's going to be so special. Anyway, time for the item that refuses to be named. It's so independent-minded, it refuses to take a title. But this week, it's Gareth Grundy talking about Talk Talk.
I first heard Talk Talk in a street in glamorous Peterborough. It was in the days when shops like Dixon's still thought it was cool to have MTV playing on their tellies all the time. I remember hearing Life's What You Make It from their 1986 album The Colour of Spring while standing outside. What stuck in the mind was the piano riff and Mark Hollis's vocal. He seemed to be trying to convince himself the optimistic title could somehow be true. Scott Walker almost out of retirement, Talk Talk singer and principal songwriter Mark Hollis is one of the few remaining recluses left in music. He hasn't made a record in 10 years or played live since 1986. In fact, Talk Talk themselves dissolved in the early 90s, shortly after their final album, 1991's Laughingstock. Formed in London 10 years earlier, they have the kind of career trajectory that makes artier musicians jealous and record companies weep. The canny Hollis would use each little bit of success to increase his artistic freedom, with such determination that a band which began as fairly cheesy synth pop, all bright colours and jaunty hats, ended up as the missing link between Miles Davis in A Silent Way and Radiohead's In Rainbows, the very epitome of avant-garde. So the success of 1984's glam It's My Life, later butchered by No Doubt, paid for the acoustic bells and whistles of 1986's Life's What You Make It. 3 million sales of that album resulted in Talk Talk locking themselves in a church for 11 months, telling their label to sod off until they'd finished, and occasionally recording in darkness for extra vibes. They surface with 1988's Spirit of Eden, musically complex but emotionally direct. Spirit of Eden was the realisation of Hollis' vision. It combined the pared-down grace of modern classical sounds, the devotional feel of religious music, and, let's not be scared about this, jazz rock's sense of adventure. As Left Turns go, it makes Radiohead's Kid A seem like a jolly wheeze. There were no obvious singles, it was too complicated and expensive to tour, and their label EMI threw up their hands in despair, as did plenty of people who preferred their previous incarnation. Critically acclaimed, but inevitably a commercial failure, it still sounds like the future. From Spirit of Eden, this is I Believe in You. There are those who blame Talk Talk for the invention of 90s subgenre post-rock, which is unfair as it holds them responsible for lots of earnest students playing endless instrumentals. Plus it makes them seem a bit boring, which isn't the case at all. Nevertheless, after a bit of tedious legal wrangling, their next release, 1991's Laughingstock, was on an actual jazz label, Polydor offshoot Verve, which is where the Velvet Underground ended up because no one knew what to do with them either. Laughingstock heads even further out into uncharted territory, amping up the sanctified feel. There are songs called Ascension Day and After the Flood. It's also, by Guy Garvey's own admission, a major influence on Elbow. Now, Elbow's own big tune, One Day Like This, is very Talk Talk indeed in its lush sound and existential lyric. So, from Laughingstock, this is Merman. That's Merman as in one of the gifts the wise man gave to Jesus, rather than a bloke with gills.
Tread dependence beneath my feet. Step right up.
Even fewer people bought Laughingstock than Spirit of Eden, and the band duly fizzled out. Rhythm section Lee Harris and Paul Webb formed vaguely world music outfit O-Rang, and later worked with Portishead's Beth Gibbons on her pastoral folk project Rustin Man. Mark Hollis, meanwhile, lived a quiet family life in Suffolk and Wimbledon before releasing a self-titled solo album in 1998. Bleak but lovely, it helped the growing Talk Talk cult along. Critically acclaimed American folkie Bon Iver has been covering I Believe in You live of late. But really, hardly anyone outside the faithful noticed. This was understandable as the album was stripped down almost to the point of silence. Hollis has been invisible since, although we need to bear in mind he's a very slow worker. He once spent a couple of days hitting the same piano key simply so he could listen to the strings resonate. Anyway, this next and final track is so quiet that if you have any noisy appliances, turn them off now. This is Mark Hollis with, in a nod to his previous band, the late, great Talk Talk, The Colour of Spring.
So the bridges that are burnt.
That was Gareth Grundy there on Talk Talk. Gareth, the deputy editor of Observing Music Monthly. Do you think we're kind of having some kind of small takeover? Seems like there's some member of OMM staff involved in the pod every week now.
Integration.
Oh, my God.
Might mean anything to the listeners.
No, but it means so much to us. Changing working practices. Woohoo! That's the end, I'm afraid. Any mention of integrated working practice is bound to kill off a podcast. So that's the end of us from this week. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to producer Scott. Thanks to all the guests. Thank you especially to Rosie Swash.
You're welcome, especially.
We're going to leave you this week with a special, exclusive, unplugged acoustic track from Emmy the Great. This is We Almost Had a Baby. See you next Friday. Bye-bye.
Well, you didn't stop when I told you to stop. And there was a month when I wasn't sure if the next time I saw you out on the road, I'd have something to say other than pay all of the money that you owe. And I would have liked to have something above you, to have something to hold, and know I could choose to let it grow. And I would have called you, and I'd have said, hey, you know I'm in control, and I'll let you know if you have to come and choose a name. Well, I am a woman. Well, you know I'm a woman. But before I met you, I was only a kid. You know there were moments when you thought you would break me, but you wanted to take me, so you did. And I will think of you now that we are apart. I put my hand across my gut, I plan to feed it with a heart. I'm not the girl that you remember from the start. I was only a baby, now I am what you made me. Whoa, oh, whoa. And I will think of you now that we are apart. I put my hand across my gut, I plan to feed it with a heart. I'm not the girl that you remember from the start. I was only a baby, now I am what you made me. And once you left me in the spring, and twice you left in full, and once I tried to make a life to keep myself in yours. Do you think of me when you are playing the one and five in four? Is country music what your life?